Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. Go check out reallifepharmacology.com. If you haven't, go subscribe there. With your email, you'll simply get a 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. Great little study guide, great little review if you've been in practice for a while. And I highlight some of the most important things that I actually see in clinical practice. I know it's hard sometimes to get relevant information when you look at drug information handbooks and things like that. So again, go check that free resource out. You'll simply get it for providing an email, and we'll obviously get you updates when we've got new podcasts and other content out available as well. So let's get into the drug of the day today. That is rosuvastatin or Crestor. I wanted to follow up after the previous episode with atorvastatin. I thought it might be an easy thing to do if you're studying, preparing for, you know, cardiovascular topics, exams, boards, that type of thing. Kind of keeping these podcasts together a little bit. So with that said, rosuvastatin, brand name Crestor. It is a statin medication, and it lowers cholesterol. Classification is an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. And again, that's the enzyme that really controls the speed or controls the process primarily of that production of cholesterol. Ultimately, what are we managing? By lowering cholesterol, we're reducing risk for like atherosclerosis, cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, strokes. We're trying to prevent those things basically by lowering cholesterol. All right, so let's talk about some differences potentially with other statins. Rosuvastatin is one of the most potent statins, by potent basically meaning that you're going to get more bang for your buck. There's going to be a larger reduction in LDL compared to most other agents. And indeed, rosuvastatin, there's low intensity, moderate intensity, and high intensity. Rosuvastatin being potent, we can get to the high intensity level for its cholesterol lowering effects. And that's considered at less than, or excuse me, more than a 50% reduction in LDL. But it's important to note that it is based upon a target dose. So that high intensity reduction, you're generally going to need a dose of 20 milligrams of rosuvastatin up to 40 milligrams, which 40 milligrams is the generally recommended maximum dose for rosuvastatin. I will say in clinical practice, I see these dosages all the time, 20 milligrams, 40 milligrams. I would say probably 40 milligrams if patients are in that high intensity category where they're at high risk for cardiovascular issues. I will say I probably see 40 milligrams of rosuvastatin used more often than 20. Rosuvastatin is a hydrophilic statin. So breaking that word down, it's water loving basically. And that differs quite a bit from many of the other statins that are mostly lipophilic. So most of the statins are lipophilic. Rosuvastatin is actually hydrophilic. Pravastatin is the other one that is also hydrophilic there. So from a clinical perspective, what does this mean? I think I alluded to it previously a little bit in the atorvastatin podcast, but if you have a patient that started atorvastatin, you might want to switch them. If they didn't tolerate that lipophilic statin, you might want to switch them to a hydrophilic statin. In my clinical practice, that's most commonly where that bit of knowledge is used. Basically, just recognizing that we might have a potential lower incidence of side effect by giving a different drug with a different felicity, whether that's hydro, water, or lipo, which is basically lipids or fat-loving type of medication. So that's where you can potentially use that info clinically. If a patient is not tolerating their statin, depending upon the severity of the reaction, of course, you've got to judge that clinically. You might consider trying a different one there. Monitoring parameters I wanted to mention, of course, and this is going to be in general, basically with all statins, we're going to monitor lipids, okay? And one important thing I think that I want to emphasize just from my experience in practice, when you have a patient that's been otherwise stable with their lipid levels and they're on a statin medication, doing well, and you all of a sudden see a spike or a jump in cholesterol levels, one of the first things you should think about is non-adherence. You know, did they not take it for a period of time? Do they feel like they're now all of a sudden having side effects and they quit taking it? So that's why monitoring those lipid levels are important, because I have seen definitely patients that have been stable, have done well, and all of a sudden they stop taking it for whatever reason, whether they think it's a side effect or whether, you know, something else wacky is actually going on, or they're just tired of taking pills, which happens to people sometimes as well. But critical to recognize that a big change in lipid levels could be indicative of an adherence issue. And that's the first place that I normally look or try to investigate. And certainly we can ask the patient. They may be forthright with you. They may not be. Another really good place to check on this is just checking the pharmacy records. You know, are they actually getting it filled? So calling their pharmacy and getting that figured out. Really, really important to try to figure out why they stopped taking it, if they stopped taking it, and if they are taking it faithfully and you have no reason not to believe them, then, you know, we've got to try to figure out what else is going on with that patient. So again, lipid monitoring periodically, really important. LFTs and CPK. Those two are typically going to be checked as clinically indicated. So if a patient has signs of potential hepatic issues like jaundice, for example, yellowing of the skin, or issues with elevated CPK, so symptoms that you might see there is risk of rhabdomyolysis, so like myopathy, muscle soreness, that might prompt you to check a CPK and make sure everything is okay there. So that's kind of the gist of monitoring parameters there. Pregnancy alert, I talked about that a little bit in the atorvastatin podcast, so I'll let you go back there and listen to that if you want to catch that somewhat recent update here in 2021. Administration, it does have a longer half-life compared to a lot of the other statins that have a short half-life. So any time of the day is generally going to be fine with rosuvastatin. Adverse effect profile, you know, I mentioned myopathy, liver risk, rhabdomyolysis. So liver risk, rhabdomyolysis, extremely rare, and generally something that I don't worry about much, but if patients are reporting symptoms of those potential issues and recently changed, started a statin, anything like that, you definitely have to take that seriously, because there's absolutely reports of that happening for sure. Also, pay attention in our geriatric folks. Sometimes muscle achiness and things can be attributed to a lot of other things. And we got to make sure that the statin actually isn't causing that. And it certainly could be due to other things as well. But it's definitely something to think about and keep in the back of your mind. Patients that are having a lot of trouble with aches and pains that you really can't associate to anything else. Let's make sure that we're not causing more harm than good with our statin therapy there. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material like BCPS, ambulatory care, geriatrics, definitely go check out meded101.com/store, STORE. I've got a growing list of resources, including a recent practice exam that's been released for the psychiatric exam, Also, the medication therapy management certification exam, we can definitely help you get prepared to pass that exam. So go check out all those resources. If you're a student, we've got NAPLEX content. And then, of course, if you're another healthcare professional listening to this, we've got resources for nurses, physicians, nurse practitioners, on case studies, drug interactions, drug-food interactions was a recent resource we put together. Lots of different opportunities for you to expand your medication knowledge base. So go support the sponsor. Any purchases through meded101.com/store goes to directly support the podcast here. All right, so let's finish up with those drug interactions. And one of the big advantages, or I would say a significant advantage of rosuvastatin versus atorvastatin, is we're going to have less CYP enzyme interactions with rosuvastatin. So that is definitely a nice thing not to have to worry about with rosuvastatin compared to a drug like atorvastatin. However, there are some things that you definitely need to look out for. Fibrates, certainly. I mentioned, I think, those in with the atorvastatin podcast as well. Daptomycin, niacin, those can all increase the risk for rhabdomyolysis. So starting, making changes, increasing dosages, pay attention and keep an eye out for increased muscle pain, soreness, any signs that may be indicative of rhabdomyolysis. One other one I wanted to mention that's an herbal supplement or an over-the-counter supplement is red yeast rice that has a potential statin component within that supplement. So in essence, you're basically doubling up, or could be to a certain extent, getting a little bit of a double dose of statin there. So that could certainly increase your risk for those rare things to happen, like rhabdomyolysis or liver issues, and so on and so forth. So that is definitely one kind of, you know, nutritional supplement, alternative therapy to pay attention to when you've got a patient on a statin. So again, remember that one, red yeast rice. Protease inhibitors for HIV. Those can potentially increase concentrations of rosuvastatin. I would say generally it's going to be less than a simvastatin or atorvastatin, but it is something to think about there. Rifampin and carbamazepine, they may mildly reduce concentrations of rosuvastatin. So those are really the big ones I think about with rosuvastatin. In general, I would say drug interactions are pretty infrequent with rosuvastatin, and certainly I didn't go through the all-extensive list of possible drug interactions, but just wanted to highlight some things that I've definitely seen in clinical practice that may be slightly more common than others there. So with that said, that wraps up the podcast for today. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Comments are great too. They've on days that are a little bit slower for me or tougher to get motivated, sometimes I look at the comments and I'm really appreciative to all those who have left a kind note and have found value in the podcast, because I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't for the knowledge that I understand that people are benefiting from it. And I'm truly grateful for those of you who have reached out. It makes my day for sure, and helps me keep going. So again, thank you all so much. I'll leave a rating review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Go subscribe to reallifepharmacology.com. Support the sponsor, meded101.com/store. All those ways you can definitely help grow this podcast and help keep these available for everybody to benefit from. So if you want to reach out to me, mededucation101@gmail.com, or you can track me down on LinkedIn, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP. Okay, I'm going to sign off for today. Take care. Have a great rest of your day.